changed slightly the title, but I think the content is more or less the same chapter. First of all, thanks to Anna and Eric for inviting me. I will try to combine two different models, and one is part of my collaboration with Franco Bagnoli and his group at the University of Firenze. So there are two important factors that we have to consider in an epidemic spreading on a network. The first is the importance of the media or the information in general. It can be something globally like television or newspapers, or can be even our neighbors that tell us about the media, or they look ill and we try to avoid the contact. That is why perhaps feeling, having a sort of rich perception about the outbreaks, I may choose an alternative route if or a different transportation media to reach a destination. And then the second important thing is the age structure. For instance, in flu, you have the toddlers that are in nursery. They have a lot of liquids in the nose. They touch each other, so they are very likely to get the cold or the flu, and then to pass to the infants or to the children and the parents, and then the elderly later on in the following months. So, about the first model, the risk perception, just to go back to SARS, that is something about how SARS was perceived. In the right top, there are two newspapers from Toronto. I got some insights yesterday when I changed it. And one is the Globe and Mail that I received this morning in the hotel, and the other is the Star. And the other one is a newspaper from Belgium. And that is the x-axis, the one corresponds to the outbreak of SARS, and was 16, 17 of February was in some sense considered, in some sense, the D-Day. And the mainland China, and you see, is bivariate. Instead, it's not that, it's just that the World Health Organization received a sort of an anonymous report on what was going on in China, and probably the numbers initially were hidden. Do we have a point? Oh yes, it is. And here you see that the news has been given a bit later. So, how is important the information in driving the epidemics? That is a table about the dependent variable is the information, the word SARS in the newspaper, or the article on SARS in generally, and this is about the disease, the number of people who got affected by SARS, and this is just the simple correlation. There is a high correlation because probably newspapers copy each other, or in some sense they pass each other information. So you see two newspapers in Toronto, the correlation is very high in accumulated on all the time, while this is about people and information. So, but why that pattern? It's probably a combination of the fact that SARS was not well known and was originating in a very remote area, even for residents in Beijing. And once the danger of SARS became known, even in countries that didn't get any infected, The national newspaper started to make in a lot of emphasis to push the information of the danger. So, beyond the biological parameters, having super spreaders that may be people that are traveling a lot, as I do, or individual variation, that is the level of how much susceptible to the SARS. That means that how do you, if you, your immune system is not going well, you may be more likely to get infected, or other things that you can compute on a network. An important factor that has been neglected is the perception of the risk, is the perception of how much risky your behavior is. And that is from a neighborhood point of view, short-range information contacts, or from the media, long-range. How much these two sorts of information will change the dynamics of an epidemic? So, with Franco Bagnoli, it was his original idea, this risk perception, we have implemented a sort of, well, the expression probably is a probabilistic automata, sort of Domani Kinzel, and we have studied the effect of this perception in a simple epidemics model. There are two parameters, J and alpha, that reduce the infectivity of the disease as a function of a fraction of people that are manifestly ill. What you do with J and alpha is that you transform the infectivity in a variable. It's not something given, something that is biologically related to the kind of virus and the infection, but it's something that is modulated by the your behavior. So the J is something about, is a linear response, I will show, and the second model some nonlinear effect, like the increasing of prevention due to a public exposed role. So, the number of, in some sense, the information about the number of infected S, and this is the connectivity, is modeled on a network, and we tried a different kind of network, random networks, or networks with fixed connectivity, lattice, and also networks with scale free, and this H is a sort of global effect, is an information that can spread all over the network from originated by perhaps newspapers or television. So you are sitting in your living room and you watch the television and that there is something going on. At that point your neighbors knock at your door and he looks like he's affected because he's coughing, and he invites you for dinner. You say, well, no, I cannot tonight. So that is the kind of things that push you in that kind of moving the epidemics away. The other is about the J, that is the local, and it depends on how many of your neighbors are infected. So how this will be plugged into a network? First of all, this is always problems with laptop, and this is the K I, and the K, this is a scale-free network that we tried, and in which we use, just this slide, it is only to say that we have tried asymmetric scale-free networks, in which the probability of input and the output connectivity nodes are different, and this is the gamma that describe the scale 3. We have tried several kind of networks, and I will show just some. Most of this simulation has been run by Lucas Guanci, that is a former PhD student of Franco Bagnoli. This is the mean field return map, and so you start with the connectivity of, this is the number of infected people, and this is the number of infected people at a later generation, the next. And with different J parameter, that is, so J is the risk perception, is the local risk perception, is your neighbors what tell you, and the increasing is the of J is also in some unit that is not easy to define, is the increased information that you get from your neighbors. And this is the fixed connectivity K equal 10, and you, for now, for simplicity, we assume that we don't read the newspapers or watch television, we just rely on what our neighbors tell us. That is the alpha, is the non-linearity, and the tau is the infectivity. So, what we get, you see, that is increasing the J brings much lower the C prime. So, the next generation infected is lower, with an increase of information, of local information. And that is, in some sense, expected, but just to try to mathematize that. This is the mean field dependence of the critical value of J, I call JC, with respect to the bare infectivity tau for random networks with average connectivity Z and alpha equal 1. And you see that with increasing the connectivity, you need, in some sense, more information from more level of precautions with respect to your neighbors. And this is the tau. So you see, the tau is coming something that is biologically fixed, but psychologically moving somewhere else. That is the critical value, JC, of the precaution level as a function of the base infectivity. And we look for different kind of networks and calculation. And again, we get the same kind of curves. You need more J when the tau is increasing. And that is the eta is the time, the fraction of time spent of ill in the scale-free case as a function of the connectivity. It is a funny way of writing it. I probably mistyped something, but so with K, that is the connectivity equal 10, and J is fixed equal 10, this is the fraction of the people that are ill, and how they goes up in that way. And if we look instead of J with respect to alpha, this is the kind of relationship with a number of nodes of 10,000, a connectivity equal 4, and infectivity equal 1. So we can play and do a lot of simulation. The idea is that as soon as you get some good data, you can try to fit and to give some meaning to the unit. But for now, this is work in progress. For now, we have done more a sort of theoretical consideration of the model, and this is varying J, what it happens to the connectivity, the return map with K equal 30, and tau equal 1. And let me describe more deeply this, that probably is more interesting. This is a J tau plot, and so it's a bifurcation diagram, sorry, it's cut, with K equal 30, and the number of nodes is 100, and the pluses are fixed points. The empty square are period 2. When the crosses are period 3, empty circle are period 4. Well, we ran a lot of simulation, was probably not possible to go in more details, but I think that qualitatively we cover a lot of possibility. And then period 5, empty pentagons, and period 6, and then we have filled diamonds, there is chaotic orbits. And that is, I think, is quite interesting how the introduction of this J, in some sense, brings so many patterns in the bifurcation diagram. So, some preliminary results. For fixed or peaked connectivity, there is always a finite value of J, of perception, that makes the epidemics go extinct. We study the evolution in a sort of what-scale social network, with scale-free input connectivity and an exponent gamma about 2, for which both the average input connectivity and fluctuation diverge. In this case, a linear perception, J, cannot stop the disease, but we found that as soon as the perception is increased in a linear way, that is alpha less than 1, the epidemics may get extinct by increasing the perception level. This latter transition is not continuous and is presumably induced by fluctuation in apps. That is probably also due to some limit in the population. So, there are some analogy with vaccinating the hubs. The most important difference is that this defect is more due to a local effect of diffusion of the disease, and not just simply to the local connectivity. A simple mechanism is the basis of the robustness, probably, of the human population, even in the absence of immunization procedure. One may speculate that if, in consequence of some robustness, humans have been selected to exhibit visual signs of the most common diseases, which certainly does not favor the spreading of infective agents. It means that, and that is true perhaps it's true also for genetic disease, in which there are a lot of maps in visually on the face, and this alters, modify the choice, the marital choice. Another common symptom of an illness is the tendency to isolation, which again could be the result of selection, and is because you don't feel well, and so on. What another approach that I tried is to, there are a lot of information on population and on geographic maps, and so you can try to model a bipartite graph in which you have people and location, and you have a lot of information from different cities in UK, or from transportation. We know all the people that are using the tube in London for all the different station, or and then you can also consider not just a sort of uniform population, but a population in which you know how many people are from 0 to 4 years old, how many people from 5 to 14, and so on. And so you can simulate a community taking into account the age structure of each family. And there is plenty of information. For instance, we got information about disease in schools, how many children of different age remain at home because of flu or because of other diseases. And this is, for instance, is a spreading, is a consultation rate, so it's a GPP, and for influenza-like and for other respiratory disease for in the last 10 years. All information about what is the difference between a baseline activity and the normal seasonal activity, an epidemic activity for the flu in UK, or what is the regional difference, the north, the central, and the south of UK. And then you can get a bit more information about what is the size of each family. For instance, this is in Cambridge, and it's about how many people are living in each house, how many adults with how many children. So you can build, and what is the age of the people? And you can compare across different cities in UK. This is Cambridge, and the population is mainly of students, let's say 17 or 18 to 23. And this is London. And again, you can compare the household size in Cambridge or Cambridgeshire in London. Cambridgeshire is more or less Cambridge. And what we have done is to build a platform in Java, in which you can build up in geographical and population and transportation information. This is just some functions in Java, but and then using a grid, we have now the EGE grid from CERN in Geneva, that is one of the largest, to try different parameters and different nodes. We are trying to, and then another thing that we are using, this, that is quite an important data set, is the land scan data set, that in the last edition is the 2005, it comprises a worldwide population database on a 30 second by 30 second latitude longitude grid, and that is, for instance, this is some information on the world, but you can zoom, for instance, this is the Belgium, you can get a lot of information about population and geography, and to try to make some inference that are realistic, and that is just something in progress. What is happening in the Cambridgeshire with some parameters about the infectivity of the flu, depending on the season, from the green, no one is infected, till the red, in which you have most of the population that's infected. I will not go into details. I want just to because everything I've shown is something that we have still to finish and to sell properly, but just to tell you what kind of things we can do to complement a sort of mean field approach, and the two can talk each other very nicely, we hope, and that is an influenza flu that will die in a few days, and so on. I will skip this too short, and that has been the main author of the first part, and these are my PhD students in Cambridge, and quite spread. Thanks a lot.